Well, Mark joins us on Rethink Real Estate. The reason I haven't given Mark's last name is because I'm just going to absolutely screw it up. And I even asked him to pronounce it for me before the episode, and I still am going to screw it up. So I don't want to do the injustice of doing so. But Mark is a very, very well-known author, but also well-known strategist around getting dirt rich. It's an amazing strategy that we talk about today that my mind was absolutely blown from a vacant land perspective of how to grow net worth. But again, I really enjoyed this episode with him, the energy, but also the passion around it as well, and the simplicity that there is there also. Hope you enjoy, team. Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Mark, welcome to Rethink Real Estate.
Ben, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored.
So Mark, original question that I typically ask most guests that people are just tuning in at the moment, why should they hang around and listen further to the episode? Because quite genuinely, I am excited to hear about this because you've got a nickname called the Land Geek.
Yeah, the only reason to listen to this episode is if you want to solve not just your money problems, but also your time problems. And I think that passive income is the antidote to financial insecurity.
Oh, that's good. That could almost be like a bumper sticker. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, look, we can license that. We'll talk, when we're done recording.
So let's dive into it because, you know, there's a great deal of information out there from a passive income perspective of people buying properties, you know, remodeling those, you know, then putting them into the rental pool or then, you know, taking existing structures. And there's no doubt that you can obviously give us some insights to that as well. But the one angle that you've sort of taken a little bit more to is the raw land. And I just want to understand it.
Yeah, let's actually use you as a case study.
Sure.
And I'm going to walk you exactly through how this model works.
Okay.
So Ben, you're in Newport Beach, California, correct? Okay. So I'm going to assume that you own 5 acres of raw land where I live in Arizona, and you owe $200 in back taxes.
Okay.
And so you're really advertising two important things. Number one, you have no emotional attachment to the raw land. You're in California, properties in Arizona. And number two, you're financially distressed in some weird way because when you don't pay for your property taxes, you don't value that land in the same way that a normal person might, right? And so what I'll do is look at the comparable sales on your parcel in Arizona. Let's call it a 5-acre parcel. And let's say that the lowest comparable sale for the last 12 to 18 months is $10,000. So then all I'm going to do is divide by 4. And that's going to give me what Warren Buffett would call a 300% margin of safety. So I'm going to send you an actual offer of $2,500. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to be like the typical housing people and just send you a blank offer because I can always make more money. I can't get more time. Now I'm in the negotiating business and I'm in the appraisal business. So I'm going to send you an offer for $2,500. Okay. Now you accept it. Why? Because for you, $2,500 is better than nothing. In reality, 3 to 5% of people are going to accept my quote unquote top dollar offer.
Okay.
So, but now that you've accepted it, I have to go through due diligence or in-depth research. I have to confirm you still own the property. I have to confirm back taxes are only $200. I have to make sure there's been no breaks in the chain of title. There's no liens or encumbrances. And so I have this whole property checklist that I do, but those are the main things. And I have a team in Jamaica connected to an American title company, and it cost me about $11 to do that. Now, if I was investing more than $5,000, I would close traditionally through a title company. I wouldn't take any title risk. But this is only $2,500. I'll take a little bit of risk, no problem. So while they're doing the due diligence, they're getting me the plat maps, the aerial maps, the satellite maps. I'm getting photos there. So I'm creating my marketing package while I'm doing due diligence for my buyer, right? So we'll assume that due diligence, everything checks out, and I buy the property from you for $2,500. Now I'm going to flip it, and I'm going to sell it 30 days or less, and I'm going to make a cash flow like a rental home. So Ben, I have a built-in best buyer. Do you know who it is?
Who?
The neighbors. the neighbors.
Ah.
So I'm going to send out neighbor letters saying, hey, here's your opportunity. Protect your privacy. Protect your views. Know your neighbor. So oftentimes the neighbors will buy. Now, if the neighbors don't buy and they pass, I'll go to my buyer's list. The buyer's list passes. I'll go to a website you may have heard of. It's called Craigslist. It's the 15th most trafficked website in the United States. I'll go to one I know you've heard of called Meta or Facebook, buy, sell groups in the marketplace. And then I'm going to go to the lands. Land.com, landmoto.com, landsofamerica.com, landandfarm.com, landflip.com, landhub.com, landcentury.com. These are platforms where people buy and sell raw land. But the secret is I'm going to make it irresistible for my buyer. All I'm going to ask for is a $2,500 down payment to control that 5-acre parcel of land in Arizona. And then I'll make it a car payment. Let's say $197 a month and 9% interest for the next 84 months. So it's a one-time sale. I'm going to get my money out on the down. I could go 6 to 10 months out. And now I'm getting $197 a month for the next 84 months and 9% interest. Ben, no renters, no rehabs, no renovations, no rodents. And because I'm not dealing with a tenant, I'm exempt from Dodd-Frank, RESPA, and the SAFE Act, all this onerous real estate legislation. So then it's a simple game. Can I create enough land notes where my passive income exceeds my fixed expenses? And now I'm working because I want to, not because I have to.
Do you know what? That's, you know, it's funny how you're going through this and I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense. And then you get to the part where no tenants, no structures, no managing a flip. And you're like, oh, that's 99% of the work.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think this is the best passive income model. Right. And you know, so to get back to your original question, this is the antidote to financial insecurity because we can always make more money, but we can't get more time. So once our passive income exceeds our fixed expenses, then we have time, we have money, and we have energy to do what we really want to do in life. We get the whole trifecta. And then we can go and move up Maslow's hierarchy of needs and the self-actualization and figure out what we really want to do in life. What's our true purpose?
So a couple of things that come to mind though, you know, being in the real estate community, I understand that raw land is just, I appreciate the fact of being able to go to the neighbors. I appreciate the fact to be able to then, you know, market it on other platforms and everything along those lines. But, you know, raw land is one of those things that sits on the marketplace forever. Everything can be sold for you know, in a quicker time frame if it's for the right price and ultimately someone is educated on the value of that market. But again, land, if you think about the average days on marketplace for vacant raw land, you know, and you look at that within most communities, regardless of whether it's plopped in the middle of Newport Beach or it's not. Now, again, expectations could get in the way of that. The best property in the world remains unsold based on price. But,
right,
you know, there's a part of me that doesn't believe the 30 days or less.
Sure, sure. So we're looking at an inefficient model when it comes to this market. So we're looking at raw rural land.
Okay.
So in your example, I agree. If I'm selling an infill lot in Newport Beach for $2 million, mm-hmm. it's going to sit on the marketplace. You have a very small buyer pool.
Yep.
But if I'm creating a car payment, if you've got a job in this country, you can afford this raw land.
Yep.
And there's a lust for land in this country. So essentially, it's just good marketing. And you can use the free platforms, you can use paid platforms. But I know that you have a realtor audience. We're not using realtors.
Yeah.
Because in this raw rural market, realtors, they're not interested in $10,000 raw land or $20,000 raw land. They want to sell houses with bigger commissions. Yep. So then you add to the fact that you can't get a land loan. All we're doing is creating liquidity in this inefficient market where it doesn't exist. And so we're making it affordable for everybody. And therefore, the property moves much more quickly than, say, a traditional, let's say, ranch or hunting property or, you know, forested property, or maybe you're going to do some type of subdivision, right? These are all different models and they all have different selling times, but my model is definitely the simplest. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those other ones. They can all be great, right? And the margins are fantastic. I mean, you know, our average ROI is 300 to 1,000%.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty incredible. Because I think that there's this, I guess that people, you know, probably are thinking at the moment is that there's this tangible materialistic element of society that there's going to be, you know, 90% of people that what you're saying to them immediately, they're going to shut off raw land. I don't understand how it can maintain value if it's in the middle of nowhere and all of those different things. But there's this part of the community that, like you said, there's a lust for land in when it comes to North America. But what are the sort of areas that you're targeting most of the time? Where are you seeing most of your business done in the past or others that are doing this model? You know, how are they finding, how are they acquiring, how are they seeing these opportunities? Because I think that in principle, it's great, but it's getting started and a lot of people not knowing where to start.
Yeah, it's such a good question because if I'm in Iowa right now listening to this, right? I mean, let's face it, nobody wakes up and thinks to themselves, boy, I'd like some raw land in Iowa, unless you live in Iowa. So we're going to focus on the sunshine states and the fast-growing states and that have a plethora of inexpensive raw land. So Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, California, parts of California.
Parts, yeah.
Nevada, Texas, Florida. Let's go a little bit in the Northwest, Oregon, Washington, maybe parts of the Midwest, Missouri, Tennessee, where you have some nice forested properties. That's going to be where you're going to find your biggest buyer pool anyways. And so that's really where you want to focus. And so when I teach our clients to look for a market, we make it really simple. Just go where you know definitively there's a market. So you'll go to a site like landmodo.com, and where are the other land investors buying land? Mm-hmm. Where are they selling land? And that's where you want to start. So it's often a fallacy. Well, you know, I live in Newport Beach, California. I should start there. Well, no, you shouldn't start there. It's going to be, no one's going to buy and sell you a piece of land, 25, 30 cents on the dollar in Newport Beach. They're going to find the biggest, baddest land broker in town, sell it for 120, 130 cents on the dollar.
Have you seen institutions get involved in this space? You know how, you know, there was an influx of institutions that got involved in the institutional purchases that got involved with, you know, Blackstone and all of those ones that come in and buy properties and, you know, trying to fix them up and rent them properties out or even not fixing them up and just kept creating this massive marketplace of institutional investors. Have they cottoned onto the land side of things at this point?
Yeah, they're not going to because for them it's too much money.
Okay.
Right. So they can't deploy enough capital in this niche. They have too much money.
Right.
So we're sort of in this Goldilocks niche where too little capital could be a problem. Right. But then too much money is also a problem. If I give you $1 billion, you won't be able to, I mean, it would just take too long because the deals are too small, essentially.
Right. So first place, like let's say that we're getting coached through this at the moment with you and you're coaching me to start this and do this as an individual. Because I think that, you know, not only is it a real estate community that is listening to this, they're also very savvy investors and a lot of people in the multifamily space and a lot of investors that reach out to us from listening to this podcast is that, you know, where do I start looking? Like, again, I know it's the sort of same answer as that, well, where do you start looking for a flip or whatever it may be? Like go and look in those sources. But is there anywhere different that like I have to do? Because I can't exactly go out and start door knocking people or really flyer dropping them, or you've got to try and find, you know, where they live based on the title. What are the resources that you would say or websites or things that people should be looking at or investing in if it's software or something along those lines to sort of get started?
Right, right. So we have two software programs that really run our business. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to like thelandgeek.com/resources, you'll see we have something called LG Pass that runs the front end of the business, which automates sending out direct mail as well as, you know, walking you through that whole process that I walked you through all the way to closing. So what used to take me 20 minutes in paperwork now takes a second, right? So the software generates it. And then on the back end is called geekpay.io, which is a set it and forget it payment system. And that manages your notes. So we set up people, we get our down payment via credit card or ACH, and then we do recurring payments via ACH. Wow. And it handles all the math and the notifications, and it's fantastic. So you want to use those two pieces of software to run your land business. And then your third point of leverage is going to be inexpensive virtual assistants. And so there's already trained companies out there. There's a company like landva4u.com or landmasters.us. There's parcelreview.com. They'll actually do your due diligence. So we've actually created like a little mini economy of people that just specialize in helping land investors buy and sell raw land.
It's so amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. That these little communities that are created. We had a gentleman on here at the beginning of the year that was into mobile homes, like how he's created an entire sector for mobile homes. It's just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, but even when you're getting started, well, you're like, okay, well, where am I going to get a list of landowners? Well, you can go directly to the county, and you can get all the county information at a website called NACO.org, N-A-C-O.org. And it gives you all that the key players' information in each county. There's 3,007 U.S. counties. But to make it really easy, you can go to a company like datatree.com. You can get a discount, /thelandgeek, and get a discount. And you can just buy a list. And they'll give it to you in the file that you need to upload into our software. And then you can automate your mailings. So basically, we'll teach you, make 30 offers a day. That's it. And you can schedule your mailing out. It helps your mailing budget. And it also allows you to get your due diligence reps in, because if you start sending out thousands of mailers, you don't have the infrastructure to manage the incoming offers.
I think that this is, so it's sort of making a little bit of a segue into mistakes and things that you made in the very beginning, because obviously you're mapping this process out. You've been kind enough to give us a link that'll be in the show notes that people can click on and get a free book, which is amazing. So we appreciate that. Is it called Dirt Rich, the book? Is that right?
It's called Dirt Rich.
Yeah, Dirt Rich. I love it. That's so good. But yeah. But I think that the thing that I just sort of want to explore with you a little bit is the journey that you went through discovering this. Like, how did this become a thing for you? Like, first, like, sort of, when did the light bulb come on?
Yeah. So if we rewind the tape to 2000, I was a miserable, micromanaged, 45-minute commute to work and back investment banker, specializing in mergers and acquisitions with private equity groups. And Ben, it got so bad for me. I wouldn't get the Sunday blues anticipating Monday coming around. I'd get the Friday blues anticipating the weekend going by really fast and having to be back at work on Monday. So my firm hires this guy, and he's telling me that as a side hustle, he's buying up raw land pennies on the dollar at tax deed auctions. He's flipping them online and he's making a 300% return on his investment. And Ben, I'm looking at companies all day long. In a great company, great, has 15% EBITDA margins or free cash flow. Average company's 10%. I'm looking at companies all day long, less than 10%. So of course, I don't believe him. So I got $3,000 saved up for car repairs. I go to Mexico. I buy 10 half-acre parcels, an average price of $300 each. I flip them online. They all sell for an average price of $1,200 each. It worked. So I took all that money and I went to another auction. And this is in Arizona where I live. And again, it's 2000. There's no one in the room. And I'm buying up lots and acres for like nothing. I sell all that land. I made $90,000 cash. So I go to my wife and she's pregnant. I said, honey, I'm going to quit my job and become a full-time land investor. And she said, absolutely not. So I said, okay. So it took me 18 months for the land investing income to exceed the investment banking income. And then I quit. I've been doing it full-time ever since. I've done over 6,000 land deals. And growing is still, you know, we love it.
Well, so it all just stemmed from an individual saying that that's what he was doing. What would you say were the turning points for you within the process of doing so, where you, the mistakes that you might have made, where it might have derailed wanting to do it? You know, that
I'm really conservative, so okay. I really looked at the whole business sort of from an investment banking standpoint. And also from a standpoint of how is this going to affect my life, right? And so what I liked about it in the beginning was I looked at the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. Is I own this asset that's essentially a piece of paper. It's not going to take up any physical room in my life, right? It's not going to be in the garage. There's no physical inventory. And I like the fact that I didn't have anything to maintain. I didn't have anything to protect. You can't destroy it, right? And so I thought, well, the biggest risk for me is I can't sell it. And so, but I thought, well, someone is going to want it. And the taxes were cheap. So I thought, well, worst case is I could barter it, right? Maybe I'd get free haircuts for a year, or free dentistry for a year. Somebody would want this piece of raw land. But it turned out that I've never had to barter it. I've never been stuck with a piece of raw land. And, you know, there's literally a pig for every barn.
That's a good saying. That was actually destroys my next question. I'm like, give me a situation where you might have, like, because again, every flipper has a story where they've lost money on a property, you know, where when there's obviously a physical structure on it and they've, you know, made some design problems, they've held the land, or sorry, they've held the property for, you know, a longer period of time. So therefore it's eroded away their profit, you know, things along those lines. Is there any situation or any circumstance that when you've purchased something and then you've through the due diligence process, you might have missed something and then something's gone wrong. I'm trying to appeal to the absolute pessimist there going, guys, this is probably, you know, something that everybody should look into, because there's naturally going to be a percentage of the audience that are going, ah, there's no way that this works or whatever it is, but it sounds pretty good.
No, it sounds good. I mean, if I'm listening to this, I think the first question is, well, if it's so great, why is he teaching this? Right? I'd be skeptical, like, all right, well, it can't be that great, right? He'd keep it a secret. And so, you know, the backstory of that is in 2010, I was on vacation, actually in Northern California, and I got a call. And this guy calls me. He's like, you know, I'm on your website. I really like what you're doing. Will you teach me how to do what you do? And I said, I'm sorry, I don't teach people how to do this. And he's like, well, what if I pay you this? I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay.
So I told my wife, I'm going to teach this guy, Tori, the land business. She's like, why would you do that? You're going to create your own competition. I said, oh, that's a good point. I shouldn't teach him. I'm like, well, let's just do an analysis of the market. So again, I put on my investment banking hat, or, you know, venture capital hat. So the question is, well, how big is the market? And it's massive. There's billions of acres of raw land available just in the United States. You couldn't think of a more boring real estate niche. It's not like you're going to go on HGTV or the DIY network and say, flip this land. The before picture's raw land. The after picture's raw land. If you go to a RIA meeting, there's 100 people in the room. 99 of them will be house flippers, landlords, and wholesalers. Yep. You and I would be the only land guys there. So we have this massive market. It's inefficient. It's really boring. And since I've been teaching it, the businesses only continue to grow. So I have an abundance mentality, not number one, but also number two, it's the most gratifying thing I've ever done professionally, because I love buying and selling raw land. I do, but it really helps my family, right? But if I can get someone out of what I call solo economic dependency, which means if they're not personally working, they're not making any money, and they can retire themselves, they can retire their spouse, they can spend more time with their family, traveling, charities, children. That's been the most gratifying thing for me. I mean, just the other day, you know, I had someone call me and said, "Mark, you've literally changed my life." And he's at, you know, over $25,000 a month of passive income, quit his job.
It's amazing. That's great. I guess that volume comes into play here as well. I guess that, so from the people that you're coaching or yourself personally or whatever it is, what sort of the volumes that you've seen them get to on an annual basis of deals that they can do?
Yeah. So, you know, if we're just doing, let's just say a deal, let's say we do one deal a month,
right?
And our average note's $200, right? You're looking at $2,400 a month in passive income. Essentially. So for every $50,000 invested into raw land, I would budget it's going to throw off about $5,000 a month in passive income in 12 to 18 months, depending on skill set, learning curve, whatsoever. If you have $100,000 of capital to put into the market, it'll throw off $10,000 a month of passive income. Again, 12 to 18 months. So it is a business. It is a volume business. And it's really, it could, for a lot of people listening to this, it could be the gateway drug into the bigger deals, right? So you can, if you don't have a lot of capital, you can start in this niche, start building up your passive income in your bank. You can sell note portfolio as well for a big cash hit. Take that cash and go into multifamily.
Yeah, I think that, you know, but then it's funny though, why get out of the space just to create yourself more headaches? I'm sure that, you know, then the size of the deals and all of that type of stuff, but you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, because if you have a big ego, it's much more fun to tell people to party. I own, you know, 2,400 doors.
Oh, that's such a good point, Mark. That is such a good point. You know, it's so, you know, it's hilarious. It's like it's funny. There's the certain type of people that will tell you that they own a building within the first conversation that you ever meet them in. And right. And you're 100% right. They probably wouldn't bring up that they own vacant land. It's an ego that it's kind of curbing your ego a little bit and playing in a space that, you know, might not be as gratifying from that perspective, but certainly it possibly is just something that, again, to give an understanding of the marketplace, I've been in real estate all my life and I've never heard of somebody doing this. So that's how big the marketplace ultimately could be.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and everyone can wrap their heads around the fact like we all need a place to live. That's what makes real estate so great. We all need to, you know, I mean, self-storage, mobile home parks, those are the lowest default rates in real estate. I mean, they're great. No one needs a piece of raw land.
Yeah.
But 99.9% of the things we have in our lives, we don't need, but they just really want it. So help them get that that asset and help people who bought it and it's now a liability, give them the cash so they can go on with their lives and do something more productive with that money. And then you can, you know, so you're all along the line, you're creating value. And then of course your counties are getting that those tax dollars.
Your liquidity in this marketplace is something you brought up earlier in the episode, and I think that it's something that is just so eye-opening to me going through this with you. I like to end out the episode, Mark, with a little bit more personal stuff. Is that, you know, we talk about, you know, resources and things along those lines that you like, books that you love, like what are your favorite books? What might be your favorite podcasts? You know, are there morning routines or habits that you'd like to share that make your life easier with the group? Anything like along those lines that you could share with the network?
Yeah, yeah. So, so I'm kind of a habit nerd, right?
Love it.
Like Atomic Habits, James Clear. That's a great book. If we wanted to start with books, right? So, I'm constantly reading. But I think, you know, when you're in real estate, I think if you read The One Thing by Gary Keller, combined with the 12-week year, that can be transformative. But getting back to me personally, like what's helped me in my life is I just have this very consistent habit. I have a Streaks app. So now it's like I've been doing this now 400 days straight. So first thing in the morning is I do breath work for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I meditate for 20 minutes. I use an app called Waking Up, and also Henry Shukman's got a new app called The Way.
Waking up Sam Harris one.
Sam correct? Harris, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got some great guided meditations there. So, you know, so now I've got a clear mind for the day. And then I read as well. So I want to read for at least 15 minutes. I journal, get all the, you know, the stuff in my head out of my head. And I think that's really helped me. I forgot who said it. Maybe it was Naval Ravikant, but like I really like the idea of sort of transcending money and getting all the things in life that money can't buy. And for me, it's a calm mind, a fit body, and a house full of love. And so having, you know, building my life around those three core values, I think has really, you know, moved the needle for me.
Just a general question. Do you do anything with the journal notes, or are they just literally put into a book where it's just dumping stuff out of your brain, or does it structure anything for you that you go back and you look at?
I don't really, I'm so, you know, future focused. I don't go back and look at it and theme it necessarily and see, oh, these are the common themes. It's more like getting that inner curmudgeon out of my head and just kind of writing real fast and getting it out and then be like, okay. That feels better than having this swirling in my head. Like, here's this problem, here's that problem. Okay, I just got to write it out, so to speak. Or just, you know, appreciation or some gratitude as well. You know, it really starts the day well for me.
Where did you learn breath work?
So there was, I'm in a mastermind group, and there was a guy named Jason Campbell, and he was doing like this breath work techniques. This is maybe 3 years ago now. And I felt really great after it. And I started talking to him. He's like, you know, if you meditate, I'm like, oh yeah, I've been meditating for like 10 years. He's like, yeah. He's like, your meditation will be much deeper if you start with breath work. And so I equate breath work to like pickleball and meditation like tennis, right? And so breath work is real easy and it kind of helps you deepen your meditation.
Well, again, we appreciate you being so open with everything that you've learned so far. I hope that this is an added resource for our audience. It's certainly a different take on things. I love bringing a few little different takes on certain things, definitely. But again, we really appreciate you, Mark, for jumping on and being so open with us, and looking forward to watching the journey in the future for sure.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it.
So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us, and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.